A quick note, at Focus Corp, we don't just do retained executive search, but we also place interim finance and accounting professionals. If your team's down a headcount, or covering a long leave, or you're tackling a special project, or you're just slammed, we can get experienced bilingual talent to you fast. Reach out. My contact details are in the show notes. Now, onto our show.
One of my kind of new learnings is around complexity theory, which makes a distinction between complicated situations and complex situations. Complicated situations, like, there are answers that are knowable. It can be quite intricate and involved, but there is some answer to something. But with complex situations, there is no known solution. And more of what people are facing in business and the world are complex solutions where answers really cannot be known. And the only way, well, there could be lots of different outcomes, but the only way to get there is through, like, collaboration, experimentation. And so leaders being at their edge, especially leaders who hold leadership in the way of thinking that they have to know the answers. I'm a leader, I have to know the answers. Well, you're kind of screwed in complex situations because those answers are not knowable. So can you be at the edge of, like, well, the only way that I can do this is to be better at collaboration, to be better experimenting with my team and play at that edge and see what unfolds.
Welcome to the Focus Corp podcast, where we dive deep into leadership, talent, and the evolving world of business in Japan to help you focus on your core business. Today, I'm welcomed by the wonderful Corey McGowan. This is his second time on the Focus Corp podcast. Yeah. And Corey's not only Japan's coach for adventurous leaders, but he's also a personal friend. He's my coach. He coaches our leadership team at Focus Corp and many of our clients, so I'm very happy to be speaking with him again today. Corey works with executives and leadership teams, navigating transitions, cultural complexities, and bold visions. He's based in the mountains of Japan, where he combines deep coaching expertise with a spirit of exploration, whether he's guiding leaders through strategic crossroads, facilitating team transformations, or leading motorcycle tours through the mountains of Minakami. Through his company, Adventure Partner, he invites leaders to step beyond comfort and into growth, starting with a wilderness retreat and continuing through a year of transformative coaching. Corey's clients span industries and cultures, but they share a common thread. They're ready to lead with more clarity, courage, and connection with Corey. Got all those C's.
Beautiful
in there.
Beautiful alliteration, man. Yeah, good work.
Welcome, Corey.
Thanks. Good to be back.
How are you?
Yeah, it's a gorgeous day here in Minakami. You know, the one of my favorite things about this time of year is the mix of, in Japanese, you know, the shinryoku, the new green, with, like, a really blue sky. It's gorgeous.
So it always smells good, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think the last time you were on the podcast, you were sitting out in the snow. And yeah, that was the first and only time where anybody's been outside to record a podcast.
Yeah. I thought about that today, but I decided to prioritize sound quality today instead.
Nice.
I didn't have an office, I think, last time we talked.
And you have a beautiful office. So. You got your guitar and bongos in the background and books. And for anybody who doesn't know you, why don't you lead us through your career from the U.S. into corporate Japan into the rural mountains of Minakami?
Sure. So I've been in Japan since 1999. Maybe not that unique, but, like, basically all of my professional career has been in Japan, only in Japan. Started off doing what a lot of us do, was in English teaching for a little while, was in recruiting for a little while. And then my path kind of diverged a bit from normal. Spent kind of the longest stint that I did at Kidzania Tokyo, which is like an edutainment theme park for kids. Came in like a training role and worked my way up to being a director there. And so got my first really inside view to high level management and leadership, particularly in Japanese organization. Saw that a lot of it was really like kind of weird and messed up, and that got me curious about like how leaders develop. So started to get more curious about like organizational management, learning a bit about that, and then shifted into a role at Tokyo American Club where I got to do that for about 5 years. And that's where I got certified for coaching. Did that internally at the club for a while. Then while I was at the club, made the move out to Minakami. Took a job running an outdoor and adventure company for a while, and then started my own coaching practice just about 5 years ago.
Congratulations. What's it
Yeah.
like? You got your dream job. You always get, I always send you a message on Mondays and I get this out of office. It's not that you're not working, you're having an adventure Monday. What's an adventure Monday?
So a couple years into starting my business, I realized that I was working a lot, 5 days a week. I was like, this isn't actually that different than working for someone. So if I could change it in any way that I wanted, what would I experiment with? And so the first idea was to experiment with taking Mondays off myself. And the wheels didn't fall off. And it was fun to kind of theme that as my Adventure Monday. You know, the kids are at school, so I have the day to myself, go and enjoy the wilds of Minakami. But after a while, I realized I was doing that less, partly because I was kind of bored of doing it by myself. So I thought, well, what if I just use this as my way to do some networking and create connections and just invite people out for a day? So about a year and a half ago, I started doing that. It's just a free offering. Anyone that wants to sign up, it's so far it's been one-on-one. Doesn't have to be. You could come out with a couple of people. But we just, you know, whoever's coming out, they tell me what they want to get up to, whether it's hiking or trail running or pack rafting or cycling or something like that. And we just spend a day doing it. And it's been such a fun experiment because, well, it's not necessarily scalable. The relationships that I've created through that really are deep connections that inevitably lead to other things. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
That's awesome. I know that Simon's been up snowboarding with you. I need to
Yep.
commit to get up there and doing some trail running with you. So
Yeah. Yeah, let's
I
do it.
commit to doing that. That's what we commitment on the
Excellent.
show
Yeah.
live.
Yes.
One of the things I know when you're doing coaching, a big thing is shifting away from what a leader's doing and start focusing on who they're being. Talk a little bit about that.
We exist in a business world where like the doing and the outputs are just prioritized over everything, right? And that makes a lot of sense because businesses have KPIs, they need to grow, it's the way they work. But then it's easy for leaders or for people to be chosen for leadership based just on their doing, their outputs, how well they create results. But that can often be on top of leaders impacting their teams or even their families or themselves in ways that are not useful, right? So it starts with creating a greater awareness of just like, yeah, you're good at these outputs, or maybe you're not good at some outputs, but what's underneath that? What's the experience that you're having as you work, and what's the experience that you're having on other people? How are you impacting them? And so it starts with awareness, and once awareness is there, then it can become choice. Right? Like, is this the way you want to show up? Is this the way that you want to impact people? Is this the experience you want to have in your work, or do you want to shift it to something else? And so when we start to make that more about their agency and choosing into a different way of being, that inevitably can have a good impact on the outputs, right? It could be more efficient. There could be greater collaboration. There could be a greater experience for their team and the overall impact of the organization. So yeah, that's what we try to focus on.
That's great. Yeah, I think that's you can only work so much on outcomes before you can, but you can always expand as a person,
Yeah.
or implode as a person and
Yeah.
need to be blown back up. So that's
Yeah.
that's
Yeah.
brilliant.
I mean, you hear so much about burnout these days. And, if you focus strictly on output, there's limited number of hours in a day, limited amount of effort you can make. So the way out of that, efficiency may play a role, but it's a lot more about like what's the experience that you're wanting to create for yourself and for the people that you're working with.
What about, you talk about we kid in the office because it's a Corey phrase, being at your edge. You're always being at your edge. Talk about that and leadership, because I think that's what's that look like for leaders today, do you think?
So for me, when we talk about edge, it's basically your development edge. And what that means is the edge of what you know, right? And anything beyond that is the unknown. And anyone that chooses to be in a leadership position chooses to be dealing with the unknown, right? That's part of the remit of any leader. And so working in partnership with someone else, whether it's a coach or a mentor or another leader, allows you to be at that edge and then push beyond it, right? And push beyond what's comfortable for you, what's known for you, try things, experiment. And one of my kind of new learnings is around complexity theory, which makes a distinction between complicated situations and complex situations. Right. In complicated situations, like there are answers that are knowable. It can be quite intricate and involved, but there is some answer to something. But with complex situations, there is no known solution. And more of what people are facing in business and the world are complex solutions where answers really cannot be known. And the only way, well, there could be lots of different outcomes, but the only way to get there is through like collaboration, experimentation. And so leaders being at their edge, especially leaders who hold leadership in the way of thinking that they have to know the answers, right? I'm a leader, I have to know the answers. Well, you're kind of screwed in complex situations because those answers are not knowable. So can you be at the edge of like, well, the only way that I can do this is to be better at collaboration, to be better experimenting with my team and play at that edge and see what unfolds. So it's like a balance of finding the right answers for situations that are knowable, but willing to know that some situations are not knowable, and therefore, how can I collaborate? How can I experiment? How can I be beyond my edge of being the person that is supposed to have the answers all the time?
That's great. Yeah, I think that's a interesting distinguish, because I would think with leaders, as one leadership trait is being comfortable in ambiguity. And we talked about that. And I think that's only one aspect. So I think you're dividing that up into complexity and complex, and combining that with being at your edge is very insightful and useful for being able to move beyond that. And then you bring in another component into coaching, which is very unique, which is outdoors. And talk a little bit about that. I mean, besides it just being your love, I think it's almost a third leg of the stool of your coaching, right? It's not just a backdrop.
Yeah, thanks for naming it that way. I mean, two parts of that. One is I never imagined that I would get to work in this way, like working in business, but also combining the stuff of being in the outdoors and also bringing people to my community, which also helps to support the community, right? Because people contribute when they come here to stay here and whatnot. But yeah, you said the third leg of the stool. I would also name it as like kind of the third entity that is there in the coaching, which is nature, right? It's myself and a client and nature being there in her presence, the sounds, the smells, all of that. It also being in that environment helps people kind of remember who they are at a deeper level, right? So when we're stuck in cities and in offices all day, it's easy to get caught in like human as mechanistic being that has to again like create outputs and do things in this way. And we forget that we have much deeper memories of real connection to nature, right? We're not separate from it. So being in that environment brings up like a deeper remembering and a deeper sensing into our power, a deeper sensing into possibility. And then, of course, being out in nature, things are naturally unpredictable. So when leaders come out into the outdoors and we do activities together, we very quickly get to see the way that they show up when they're under stress in leadership situations at their work, right? I generally try to, when people come out on retreats, I have them do something that they probably haven't done before. You know, maybe it's stand-up paddle boarding, maybe it's pack rafting, something like that. And you put someone in an unknown environment that's also unpredictable, their stuff comes up very quickly. And it's great because we get to work with it, right? It's like, oh, what are you doing right now? You know, how are you responding to this? And how is that familiar to when you show up under stress with your team or in a situation at work? So it's a beautiful teacher and it's just fun. You know, it's fun to be outside. And also, you know, I'll say it's not for everyone, right? Like the people that are drawn to the work with me are drawn to that idea of it. They may not be very experienced with it, but they're at least drawn to it. And for some people, it's just not a fit for them at all. And that's great, right? There's lots of other coaches that are available for different types of working.
Yeah, we had I remember going out and having to build a fire. You made us build a fire from scratch, and can you give me a lighter? No. And so that was interesting, using flint and such. So you'd mentioned something about that's not coaching for everybody, that style. Let's dig into something you and I had words about online, is selecting a coach and what makes a good coach. And I think it's important, because I've had talked to people in groups and taught them how to select a good coach, and everybody's unique and needs to find the right person. I think we both agree on that. And then I was speaking to Dr. Story over at Dale Carnegie, and he and I both agreed, there's a lot of coaches that might not have experience. I think we use the word young as well, being old fogies. But I do really think that, like as a runner, I think, oh, I want a running coach who's done some running, who has broken, some barriers that I want to break. And for me to jump in with a coach that might have some theory but not the life experiences, for me, doesn't resonate. But you've came at that with a very different perspective, and I think that's important for listeners to kind of hear that as well, especially when they're looking at selecting their own coach.
So it's always a balance, right? It's always some of one thing and some of another, but I think what I was pushing back against in that conversation is that someone could not be a good coach for a leader without actually being kind of an expert or at least experienced in that field. And it really does depend on what this leader is looking for. Are they looking for a combination of coaching and advising and consulting? And by the way, most leaders probably are. But the being an effective coach and being effective in the craft of coaching does not require that you have experience in that field. Now, it does require probably a bit more experience in life because then you have more to draw on when you're in the conversation with client and when you're reaching for questions that are going to be effective, or even when you're supporting to point in one way or another or offer reflections. One of the things I remember Dr. Story was talking about is his experience with working with a coach that only ever asked questions, right? And yeah, that would get annoying really quickly. But another really powerful tool that we use that I'm sure you've experienced with me is reflecting, being a mirror, right? And it is easier to do that when we have some experience to base it on. Doesn't necessarily have to be in the field, but we've had maybe enough human interaction or interaction with leaders or in situations that we get to reflect and say, I think this is kind of what I'm noticing with you. Is this the way you want to show up? Is this the way you want to be? So yeah, I mean, that's kind of in general how I think about it. And in terms of selecting, starting with getting to meet people that have been referred to you from someone else, right? So that's a great place to start because you know, based on that person's experience, that they've gotten some value out of it. And then the next is kind of, what's it actually like to be in conversation with this person? Ask for at least one or two conversations with them to see, like, what does it even feel like? And then the second, or sorry, the third is, how clear can you get in partnership about what it is that you'd be creating through the coaching? Like, what's it even for? Right. So, in other words, distinct from it's a good idea to have a coach, good leaders have coaches, so I should have a coach, but actually, what would it be for? What would it be for? And what is some kind of structure that this coach is offering that would help to get towards that outcome that we're both clear on and we both feel like we can get to, and that there'll be the opportunity to check in regularly to see if we're actually going in that direction. So I think I would point at those three things. And then, of course, does it fit what's realistic? Like budget-wise, coaching is still such a wild west for how much they charge, what kind of structure you work with. And it's tricky because you want to work within a budget that's re realistic for you, but you also may want to say, like, this is a little bit out of my range, but I can tell based on those first three things how this person was referred to me, how it feels to be in conversation with them, and what value I think can be created, like, outside of my current edge of what's comfortable, that it's worth for me to maybe spend a little bit more. But that's kind of up to you and your own wisdom as well.
What about a tricky one for me as a coach is that you're working with an organization and the president says, I got this employee that needs coaching. That almost is a red flag sometimes. I had one where it was obvious in doing some exploration with the president that they needed a manager. They didn't need a coach. This person wasn't performing. It wasn't a reward. It wasn't a growth opportunity. It was, a penalty. And as a coach, I ran away from that. What guidance would you give leaders in organizations, presidents, or an HR professional who's thinking, wow, this is something for this leader in our organization to really help them grow, or this team to help them grow? What speak around that a little bit.
Yeah, this is a tricky one. I've worked, like, both when I worked in companies and since I've been a coach, with leaders who like to prescribe things for their teams. You need this training, this coaching. When ultimately what has the biggest impact on your organization is what you're modeling. Right? So the ideal situation is when leaders are modeling, yeah, I have my own coach. I'm working in this way. I'm developing myself in this way. And having people ask you about that, like, how do I get access to that? How do I get to get supported in the same way? Right? That's the ideal outcome. If that's not possible, and if it is, like, yeah, I need your help supporting these different managers, I would go back to what I was just saying about value. How clear can you get with that? Like, if the leader is the sponsor, how clear can you get with them about what the actual value is? And then also, how much does that person, that manager or other leader, get to have a say in that as well? Because if it's just a remit from the company of, like, this is the outcome that this person needs to have from this coaching, then, like you say, that's not coaching, right? That's maybe a manager, maybe it's a training, something like that. Right. But if there's some say in, like, we think this is the direction they need to go in, but we're willing to give them autonomy in how they work with the coach in getting outcomes that they need, then that's likely gonna be a better fit.
That's great. Let's shift gears a little bit away from coaching and the other hat that you wear, which I think is important for both of us, is just as an entrepreneur. Talk around, starting up and starting up companies, and you've started up your business and working in Japan. You've also kind of diversified. You're doing, tours, motorcycle tours, which is fascinating. You do a lot within your community. Let's talk about, being an entrepreneur and how that's shifted from your corporate world.
I never aspired to be an entrepreneur. It was never anything I thought about. I also never really aspired to be in business, but it made sense based on, when I lived in Tokyo and had a family and needed to support them. And also the things that I cared about, liked in terms of like learning and growth and all of that. So it's been a bit of a wild ride. I think there were a lot of favorable conditions when I first started my business. It was right in COVID, so being a coach online all of a sudden became a thing that was really possible, and I got it kind of early on like some different coaching platforms and got quite a bit of traction with that. And one of the things I like to write and share about on LinkedIn in particular is this idea of when we're in process with something. Often when we hear from people that are sharing things, it's like, this is what I figured out, kind of on the other side of it and being from a place of knowing. When for me, I found there's a lot more value or there is a lot of value from hearing from people when they're kind of in process. And that's where I'm at right now in my business. Like, it's been a hard year for my business this year. And part of what I've realized about that is that my focus a lot on coaching was how I coached, the different methodologies, and isn't this cool, like to do it this way or this approach and all of that. When I was much less clear on like, why am I here as a coach? What's driving my purpose, and therefore, who do I serve? Right? Who do I serve? What's the value that I provide? And I think that's true probably across entrepreneurs, is like you can get into a business like, well, I'll make money off it, or this is a really good idea, or there's a gap in the market. But at some point, if you're not really clear on who do I serve, what's my purpose, and what value do I create for them, it's probably not going to be very sustainable. So that's kind of the lesson that I'm in right now. And bringing in those other business areas, so the work with the Minakami community was always just a passion project, right? I love this community. I plan to live here until I don't live anymore. And I want my boys to have a thriving community to live in. And I really care about revitalizing rural Japan. But I thought, oh, well, that won't be my business. But I'm starting to see, like, well, actually, what if that does overlap into my business? What if I'm connecting with our other rural businesses and learning about their experience? And having that become resources for people like myself, like, shit, when it gets hard, what do you do? Like, who do you reach out to? So seeing some overlapping there. And then the stuff with the motorcycle tours was, again, like, what's a way that works and fits with who I am to meet new people? And that's what that was about, is like, yeah, I love to ride motorcycles, and Japan is an amazing place to do it. But what interests me even more is if I get to spend a week or 10 days with people on a motorcycle, chances are they're going to be a pretty good fit for my client profile, right? They're willing to travel from another country to go on an adventure and to ride a motorcycle. And so this kind of this longer term thing of, oh, these are relationships that I can build that may lead to future collaboration. So sorry, I feel like my answer's all over the place, but it's this combination of doing the things that really drive us and that we care about, but also finding how we really provide value, who are our people that we provide that value to. And
That's
I'm in
awesome.
that right now.
I think that's, it's a you start up a business and you kind of come at it with an idea and passion, but there's always that itch to provide value. And I think what you said is spot on, that how do you provide value? Where's the value for the marketplace, for my clients, for myself, and to find the synergy there and build that. And that's a part of a spark of entrepreneurship that encourage. I mean, you got hang out your sign and say, "I'm doing this." And I think that's probably, once you do that, then it gets easier. But then the keeping it going, that continual courage and continually finding values helpful. I love it. One of the value things that I loved that you did was the retreat that we had out for the company retreat. By far one of the best retreats I had ever in my career. Talk around what retreats do for you and for the company and as a client, when I say my company or any company when they come out and enjoy that with you.
There's a latent value already in a decision to step away from the everyday, right? So it could be Minakami, it could be somewhere else, could be even just going to a different meeting space, but there's a value in stepping away from what people are used to. And then, as we talked about before, there's just all the advantages of being in the outdoors and nature and how that plays a role. Also how it brings people together. And I would say some of the most important work that happens related to retreat is also like what happens before and after, right? So what's the mental preparation? How are we working with the team ahead of time? Whether it's through one-on-one discovery interviews to learn what people are hoping to get out of it. With your team, we had a fun activity on the trains where people got grouped up and just
We had to
complete.
do work up. We didn't even know we got these envelopes when we showed up at the station. For anybody who's listening, we're at the Tokyo station getting ready to go up to Minakami as our team. Corey wasn't there. He was up in Minakami, and our office manager passed out these envelopes and said, "You're sitting next to this person, and here's what you'll talk about." It was absolutely brilliant.
So it's like this lead up, because the work starts before the work, right? So it's already working. The retreat's already working on the way out. And then one of the big things I've learned from running retreats is I often overplan, right? Okay, we've got a day, or we've got a day and a half, and like I gotta have every minute covered. And I never do like even probably 50% of what I've planned, because people just naturally, they want to slow down, they want to be in connection with each other, they want to go deeper than they normally do in day-to-day meetings and conversations. So that's really beautiful to witness. And then the post-retreat is also really important. Like we call it integration work. Like how do you integrate the things that happen in the retreat? And that again can through be one-on-one coaching conversations, it can be through team coaching, but how to carry things forward is really critical. So it's the combination of those three things that I think is important and impactful.
That's brilliant. Yeah, that was our team loved it. I think it was. I recommend if you have an organization, take him out to Minakami and have Corey lead you through a day retreat. Brilliant. When I say brilliant, and so I'm going. I want a tangent on that because one of the questions I had down. It's one of these questions that, as a coach, as a recruiter, it's really tough to get. What's your take on measuring ROI in coaching? It's one of these questions. Ooh, how do you measure that?
I've got a buddy and a colleague in California who's written a couple of posts about this that really riled me up. Is basically saying, if you're not getting ROI and QOL on your coaching, then you should stop. Keep that clear. QOL is basically quality of life, right? You should get a return on your investment and improvement in your quality of your life. And that challenging me, because it's hard to measure ROI in coaching, right? And often, the power in coaching is that we don't, especially like in transformational coaching, which is kind of distinct from performance coaching, right? Performance really focuses on the doing and kind of what's the ABC to get to what you want. Whereas in the transformational work, we don't necessarily know, we have an idea of what we're going to work towards. We have an idea of the outcomes that we want. But we don't know how that may unfold. So it can be really challenging to measure ROI. And it's important. So again, back to the value piece, how can the value that's created, how can there be a line correct connected to the actual return on what you've invested? And for a lot of companies that will be more, may end up being more behavioral, than around outputs and numbers, right? So again, if you're working with a sponsor and a leader, having a three-way conversation with them about like what kind of behavior shifts do you see, what kind of value will be created through that, that has then a way to tie into the return on it. But even now, like I find myself feeling uncomfortable about it because it's challenging. And I would also say that that's true in other modalities. It's true in training, maybe in consulting, it's a little bit clearer. But it's never been easy to create a clear ROI, but often things like training get a pass because like you're supposed to do training, right? You're supposed to train your employees, and therefore we've done it. And there's maybe a bit less of questioning of ROI, but it makes sense with coaching because again, there are so many different approaches, there's so many different fee structures. And so getting clear, like both with the leader and the organization of what will the value look like that you can create back to justifying the investment.
I think that's a great conversation piece to have with the person you're sitting down with, who's either the sponsor or the client. And because I think if the sponsor's, for example, HR, and they're asking for an ROI, they often will look for a number. And I think that's a challenging conversational piece. You and I both, when we started and got certified through ICF, I think we had a contract set template that had, if you're not getting 10 times value or something like, and it's really challenging to put that in there because I don't think that's necessarily the transformational piece that you're looking at. You're looking at a person that it might be a year out before that transformation occurs, which is, but I think if the person who's sitting down you're sitting down with the coach and they're saying, "What value are you looking to get out of this?" and they don't have an answer for it, it's probably not a good coaching situation for either of you, is the answer.
Yeah, and something I just learned recently from a colleague and a good friend, Adrian Scamotto, was this idea of number one, how important it is to partner for the coach to partner with the client in understanding the value because clients are busy, right? And they're not going to make an extra effort on their own to just say, oh yes, let me calculate how well this has worked for me. So having some kind of an approach. And Adrian was telling me about basically like I think it's a Kirkpatrick model of like the five levels of change. So basically, what did you see in terms of the company's ROI? How was that related to what the team did? How is that related to the team's behavior? How was the team's related to your behavior? And then how did that relate to kind of who you're being as a leader? Right. And so it's a way that you can look at it and see these different aspects and see how have you changed? And by the way, to do this at a couple of or a few regular intervals throughout the coaching, so that part of the way you're creating value as a coach is helping them to understand the value, right? So they can be clear on it and they can talk to their sponsors about it and their organization about it. And then just the other thing I'd add to that, and what may often be overlooked, is how much is this helping you to actually keep your employees, right? Keeping the right employees as well, right? If you're giving an employee the attention of a full-time or an executive coach, that's a big vote of confidence, right? Now, if it's remedial, that's different. But generally the company's making an investment in you, and hopefully it's going to help with retention and also how they think and talk about the organization. So yeah, that's an important one to try and measure as well in terms of impact.
How do you see, because you know so much around coaching, you've done worked all over the world. How do you see Japan and coaching different here and your work here versus if whether your clients are overseas or coaching from overseas?
One is it's still, even though, I mean, coaching has been kind of known and practiced in Japan for at least 20 or 30 years, as far as I understand it. But if you talk about North America or Europe, it's been a lot longer than that, and it's just more understood what an impact it has. Right. So there's less of a, or there's more of a discussion in Japan and maybe in Asia in general about like why coaching is a good idea, why it's impactful, why it has ROI. So that's one aspect. And then the other one that I'm sure you're very familiar with also is this idea of coach as sensei. Right. So coach who provides answers, coach who guides and points and directions. So a lot of initial conversations with clients that are based in Japan and in Asia is getting them used to the idea that my job is to help you build your capacity through your own wisdom as opposed to me giving you answers. And it can take a while to establish that. So again, that's part of the partnering in the beginning is really understanding, having agreements of how we work together and what coaching is and what it isn't. So probably those two things are the biggest differences that I've seen.
What and you hinted at it. What for our listeners, what do you say that coaching is and isn't?
So coaching primarily is helping people to build their own capacity to make decisions from their own wisdom, right? And as I mentioned before, the key tools that we have to use with that are questions and reflections, right? So to help people to continue to build their own awareness so that they have more agency in how they make choices that are outside of like the patterns that have guided them up until now. And what it isn't, it's interesting, like the two things that come up when you often hear about this is, it's not teaching or advising or consulting, and it's not therapy. And the longer you do this work, the more you see that there's very blurry lines for all of that. There's a lot of gray area, right? Where we're humans having human experiences, leaders are no exception of that. So that can be a bit blurry, but a coach in integrity is aware of where it gets blurry and can be clear with clients. Certainly if it's a situation where someone needs to be pointed towards working with a mental health expert, like a therapist, then you need to do that. But it also doesn't mean that sometimes in coaching sessions, clients can't get really emotional or have things come up from their past or whatever, right? And that's part of the craft of knowing where that's like, yeah, this is just part of their leadership development process versus needing some other kind of help. And then, in terms of the advising and consulting, there may be times, particularly you've had so much experience advising businesses, right? As a executive search consultant, that you can put your hat on, your advising hat on at times, say, listen, I'm going to step out of my coaching role right now and say, like, you probably want to consider this or this move. So yeah, the willingness to kind of move in and out of those, but be clear with it so that the leader that you're working with knows when you're working your capacity as coach, and hopefully that's the majority of the work.
How do you see the difference, the word executive coach?
Versus,
Personal coaching or just coaching, health coaching. I mean, there's all kinds of coaches out there now. There's so many different flavors. I just and I know I kind of tag myself as an executive coach, but frankly, a lot of the issues are around, like you say, behavior, whether that's in and out of work. And frankly, a lot of the people I coach aren't executives, but they're mid-managers. So, how do you kind of work with those labels?
Sometimes more artfully, sometimes less artfully. I think I've over in the first few years of my practice, I think people saw me as a life coach because of the way that I was working with people or kind of the stuff that I wrote about. And I've been moving more towards the idea of leadership and executive coaching. I've always been working with leaders and executives and companies, but moving more towards that and how I'm presenting myself, primarily because those are the places where I know I can have more impact, right? I know if I work with people who are leading teams and organizations, then the impact of the work can spread out in those organizations. So, yeah, I mean, coaching overall is. It has Sometimes I even wonder about the word coach and whether that's a useful word, right? Whether we should come up with something else, because it also has a lot of it has a lot of baggage with it now. You think about people like Tony Robbins, who's, he's done amazing work, but he's kind of seen as almost a magician in some ways, or a guru, right? And so is there even another word? I try to use partner as much as I can with people, because ultimately that's what I want to do, right? I want to partner with people in their own development and their growth and how they grow their organizations. But yeah, it can be a tricky word to navigate.
Yeah, I think that's for listeners that are considering a coach, I think that's wise. I think that's a good thing to take a look at and really look around the baggage of that word and start to entangle that, because sometimes people might just need training. And coaching really is a long-term transformational process, and I think that's important versus just learning a skill. I had our marketing person go through, and that's what got me into coaching, was watching his transformation, because I thought he needed skills. And I remember sending him over to Robert Burnside and saying, he needs some skills. He can do marketing, but he's not there yet. And he recommended go over and meet with Sergio. And I got this marketing person back who didn't have marketing skills. I thought, well, Sergio's at Google, he teach him marketing, but he taught him capacity to go out and teach himself, to learn himself, to learn his own ideas. And I think that was really what convinced me that, wow, coaching does work. And I could watch, this was just five times, I think 5 hours with this kid, and it just really transformed him into someone that had the capacity to go out and teach himself now and be professional and have the business acumen. And then the marketing stuff, that's just extra. That'll come. Let's switch gears. I got some rapid fire questions for you.
Okay, I'm
Let's
ready.
close it up.
All right.
If you had to coach a historical figure, who would it be and what would you help them with?
You're so much more of a history person than I am. I looked at these earlier. I tried not to come up with answers, but the first thing that came to mind was Bob Marley.
Oh, nice.
Mainly it would be just to get to hang out
Come
with him. But he, for me, he was someone who had such a deep purpose and passion in his work, and a lot of it just got misguided, right? A lot of it was caught up
on.
in the culture of Jamaica and, all the complexity of that. But it would be fun to get to work alongside him and help him channel, like, he did have such a huge impact in the world, but could have had even more, and man, it'd be cool if he was still around.
That would be. I'm not going to ask you if you'd coach while you're stoned or not, but that's a whole different. What's if you're in America, we can say that. What's a question you never asked in coaching but wish you could?
I end up working with a lot of clients, or a good amount of clients, who just talk and talk and talk. And I think part
Myself.
of that is I have such a developed listening ability. And so sometimes I just think, why the hell are you talking so much? Right? Why do you not stop talking?
Sorry, I'll try to speak less. What's one belief you've totally flipped your mind on in the last 5 years?
Well, as I've shared with you before, part of what got me into running my own business was basically failing at a leadership role at what I thought was my dream job, right? And when that didn't work out, I thought my only option was to go put a suit back on, get back into the city, do the thing that I had always done to make money and survive. And working with my own coach, I realized that not only did I not need to do that, but there is this whole world available that I wasn't even considering. And yeah, the way that I live now, the way that I work now, if you had told me 5 years ago that that would be happening, I would have said you're crazy. And it's not easy, right? Like I told you, I'm kind of in it right now and trying to figure out how to make the business work. But the way that I spend my time and the way that I get to have impact with people and the type of people that I get to work with just like blows my mind on a regular basis.
Brilliant. Brilliant. For 1 week, you could only speak in metaphors or only communicate through interpretive dance.
Is there a question there?
Either or, which one would you pick?
Okay. The harder one for me would be interpretive dance. So yeah, I do that.
Nice. What's the weirdest thing that's ever sparked a breakthrough for you or a client?
The weirdest thing. I can't think of a specific, but I want to say that it's probably related to family stuff. You know, like so much stuff comes up with clients around family, parent relationships, and all that. Again, and this is where like the blurry line between like therapy and coaching is people are just going to show up with their stuff as humans. So I want to say it's probably something related to like a family relationship, parental relationship.
Nice. What's the you get to sit down with your 25-year-old self for a coffee? What's the one coaching, what's your one line coaching intervention?
Own it.
Ooh.
And what that means for me is like just own how I live my life. You know, I spent a lot of time when I came into business of feeling like I don't fit in, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm an outsider because of the way that I spent my time in my 20s, which was like traveling and going on adventures and that type of thing. And it's only now that I realized like that was a great way to feed what I do now. So I would just tell that guy, like, just own it. No matter what anyone else is doing, just own the choices that you've made and go for it, you know?
Great. That's a good message for anybody out there.
Mm.
And last but not least, hosting a leadership retreat, would you pick on the moon or under the sea?
Yeah, under the sea. That's, I mean, the ocean is just so amazing. It's just so full of life.
Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you. What's next for Adventure Partner?
Well, yeah, I'm really leaning into the individual coaching retreats that I do here. Totally revamping my website. That should be out in a month or so. So I'd love for people to check that out. And then, yeah, I'll be running a motorcycle trip in the fall. So if anyone is interested in doing some amazing riding in Japan in the fall, that'll probably be like a 10-day ride here. And been doing a bit more team coaching as well. So currently in the certification process, you know, I've been doing it with your team for a while, but going the full ICF certification route, and just seeing more and more of the value and getting to work with the teams as a whole and as a unit. So if anyone's looking for support around how to improve their teams, then I'd be happy to have a conversation.
That's brilliant. Well, if
Yeah.
any of what we've talked about today has sparked your imagination, I recommend you reach out to Corey and have a chat. He's a fabulous coach and will either guide you through transformation or where you can find your own transformation. And I think that's so wise and wonderful. And I thank you for your continued work and your insights, Corey.
Thanks, David. This is fun.
And thanks for being on the Focus Core podcast a second time.
Yeah, I'm in. I'm doing the uptown blow down.